Hey everyone.
What's up, guys?
Welcome to another episode of Eigen Bros. This week we have a very special guest.
Yes, the man of real estate. So this is Juan, by the way, and yeah. I'm Terrence.
Yes.
I'm Ray Uzzoni, realtor. Specialized in real estate investment. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
Yes.
So, I was going to say we catered this episode specifically to graduate students interested in purchasing real estate.
Yes, for investing purposes. So if you guys are throwing away all your money in stupid rent checks, you know, we're trying to help you out here with Ray. Yeah. Ray giving you some tips on how to actually save that money and make some equity while you're, you know, while you're in school.
Yeah.
So
your 5 to 6 year stint.
Right.
In this prison.
Do your time.
Exactly. So might as well make it worthwhile in terms of a degree, and you get to have a real asset.
Right.
Instead of just a paper, you know, that says, you know, I'm this smart. You know, you can also get a house.
Yeah, have your cake and eat it too,
yeah,
you know?
So, but yeah, Ray, did you want to plug anything? Any of your socials, your business socials, anything?
Oh,
like that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Trying to get on top of social media. I got a Facebook business page and an Instagram, are both Ray Uzzoni, Realtor.
So how do you spell it? How do you spell that?
R-A-Y is Ray. Uzzoni is U-Z-O-N-Y-I. Realtor, cool. R-E-A-L-T-O-R.
Cool.
All right.
Yep. So check those out.
Yeah,
and of course our pages too. Of course,
yeah. Guys, of course, make sure you like, subscribe, share, comment, and then check us out at eigenbros.com. Check us out at Eigenbros on Twitter. We're at Eigenbros on Instagram, and then also check out Eigenbros 2 on TikTok. So we will see you guys in
everywhere.
A bit.
3, 2, 1. Welcome.
And we are live.
We're live with another episode of Eigen Bros. This week, as you may have heard in the introduction, we have a special guest.
Mm-hmm.
We'll allow him to introduce himself.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Even though he already did, but we'll do it again.
Once again.
Wait, we've been recording this whole time? Oh, God. All right.
Real estate mogul. Trump calls him for advice. How would you say? Actually, maybe I want to ask Ray about that. Actually,
what
do you? Okay, so what does it take to be a real estate mogul?
Yes, hold on, magic's happening, guys. Come on, baby, come on.
You just got to let it happen naturally, Ray. Right. Yeah. Doesn't like to be pressured.
Cool. Okay, what are we talking about?
What does it take to become a real estate mogul?
A mogul specifically?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, I'm going to just detract this whole conversation.
Do it.
Y'all like Final Fantasy IX? those little like pig things with the head where you would like save your game? Weren't they called the moguls?
I don't remember, dude.
I
played 7.
7 was good?
Yeah.
7 was
and
good.
10. I played 10.
10 was also good.
But 9 was like, I don't remember it that well because it was a buddy of mine. So I only played like the first half when they were doing jump rope and that kind of shit.
What?
Well, you remember the jump rope mini game?
Yeah. Anyway, I can't take the title mogul seriously ever since that. I think like moogles or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But what's it take to become a realtor? What's it take to get involved in real estate investment?
Real estate investment,
It's kind of a combination of things. So like there's absolutely no obligation to become a realtor to become a real estate investor. In fact, some parties feel that it may even be somewhat counterintuitive because it is an obligation that if you're a licensed realtor, that when purchasing a property, you have to disclose that you're a realtor because there is this concern of an opportunity of taking advantage of somebody by being more aware of the process and the market and all that to where somebody might accept an offer.
Get that mic a little closer.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Sorry.
I don't know. It just sounds so good in my ears.
Yeah, but the audience won't hear it as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it gives me a
margin of error.
Anyway,
margin of error. I don't know. Should I keep staring at myself?
You can. If you want to give yourself a wink, too, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing it this whole time. You think it's an eye
like
twitch
the,
without
yeah,
freaking
it'd be like
idea.
The office. Like, you can look at the camera and just be like,
do the gym.
So
real estate investment, though. So, I don't know that there's a single right answer to that question, but I can tell you the way that I kind of found my way into it was back in high school, you know, everybody's kind of pressured or encouraged to have a, what do you want to be when you grow up kind of moment. And I was just wandering around at night pondering that, going like, why do I have to be anything?
Right.
Right? Like, why can't I just own a bunch of gumball machines and coin-operated rides at grocery stores? And for whatever reason, why can't I be like a notary?
This is an early thought then.
This is an early thought. Well, I didn't realize real estate investment was the answer to that thought. And I can also tell you that I did at some point become a notary, and it wasn't what my boyhood dreams led me to believe it might be. It was lame. But a valuable service.
No, knock on the notaries out there.
No, not at all. Not at all. But it wasn't until after college when I ended up working at a credit union for a time, and I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, if we can, like, I don't know, put a plug or whatever, right? Yeah, Robert Kiyosaki.
Sure, yeah. Put
whatever plugs. Shout out to, what's his name?
Robert Kiyosaki. Yeah. And now...
He's in jail now.
Is he really?
I was going to say, what?
I believe it. I mean, I've read a lot of his books, but at the same time, you know what's funny? I think in one of his books, he references like, oh, I went bankrupt when I was X amount. You know, it's good to get out of the way. It's like a learning experience. I was like, but wait, isn't that when you also wrote a book on how you were like massively successful? So I was like, this guy was, you know, you hear about fake it until you make it. And I hope I don't get sued for saying this, but. Because it's all speculation. I didn't actually look into this.
Yeah.
But it feels like he was bankrupt at the time of telling people how to become successful through passive investments, which not to deter anybody from appreciating real estate investment.
Yeah.
But it's like, all right, then he made a board game and like all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously it worked. The guy became massively wealthy. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember.
Put that
where I was
mic
going
close too, Ray.
Oh, dude.
Sorry,
man.
You got
to tape it to my face.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to like.
It's a little suggestive. I don't know.
Yeah. No, whatever brings the viewers, baby.
You gotta
give the people what they want. Yeah. Okay, so I feel like, okay, so it was Rich Dad Poor Dad where we kind of derailed, I would call that a cheerleader book. It tells you all about the why. It tells you nothing about the how, but it gets you excited. Yeah. Like, hey, these are the benefits it could be. And at the time. Yeah, you know, in the book it says you should spend a year as a realtor, a year in sales, a year in accounting, a year in some other stuff. And I already had some of it. The next step was real estate, so I got into that, and I ran into somebody that was doing it, right? So that's kind of how I found my way in. And mentors, you know, people that are already doing it, seeing a model that's available and then applying it to how it might fit your life and your goals is probably the way that I would encourage most people to pursue any pursuit,
right?
Whether
right.
it be a real estate investment or having a successful podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Who's got a successful podcast?
Following a successful model. Yeah, I don't know. So there we are.
Talking about.
It's been 10 minutes. We've responded to a single question with no clear answer.
So I guess, Ray, we want to kind of push this a little bit towards how to make some good real estate investment decisions if you are a graduate student specifically, or maybe even someone who just has low income. So I kind of wanted to see what we could come up with here a little bit.
Just
to tell the audience a little bit, Ray was actually my real estate agent. So when I bought a house, I specifically looked for Ray too, and I searched him out, went through the weeds, used his head shape. We have a joke because I use his head shape to to figure out to tie his personality. You guys know from some videos I did with MBTI. So I found Ray, and he's really experienced in investing and stuff, and he actually does it in real life. So I chose him from my real estate investing experience to start off with, and I have one house now. And of course, I got this while I was in graduate school too. So, of course, I had an actual scholarship, which gave me some better opportunity. But I still think it could be possible for people who have, you know, only like an assistantship or something or low amounts of income.
And I can sort of like present to you, Ray, a typical graduate student kind of scenario where they get paid maybe $20,000 a year. Maybe they have access to financial aid to pay for school and stuff, but nonetheless, there are ways for, I think, for them to pay. I mean, the way you lay it out, is it possible for somebody in that position to own a house or to buy a house or put a mortgage, I guess, on a house or something like that?
So, I mean, we have a single, I don't know if you want to call it a case study, but with Terrence, who was using his financial aid.
Yeah.
As his quote unquote income to satisfy the bank needs.
Yeah.
So where I can't give you the best answer is financial aid has, there's so many different types, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can't tell you that across the board, all financial aid would satisfy for this specific goal. But with those parties that do, and it would just be a matter of talking to a bank and saying, hey, this is the financial aid I have. Does this satisfy, you know, your needs for a qualification? Mm-hmm. For those who do have that, then yeah, absolutely it's possible. Mm-hmm. And it can be especially possible for those who are interested in pursuing what colloquially people refer to as house hacking,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the strength there, mm-hmm. and this is aside from the income, let me just say that credit comes into play as well, right? So if somebody who has a strong credit history and credit score has whatever financial aid is structure allows for them to use it as income in purchasing a property,
yeah.
then this is an option. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about house hacking, what we're talking about is people who are going to live in a house, so it qualifies as their primary resident, which enables them to use a small down payment because they're like a first-time home buyer or FHA allows for like 3.5% or 5% down versus where if you weren't doing that, you need a much larger down payment. Mm-hmm. It allows you to use a small down payment. And then further, if you're buying a property, say that's maybe a multifamily property, a duplex, a triplex, or a quadplex, so a property that is, you know, 2, 3, or 4 housing units combined on one parcel, mm-hmm. so when you buy it, it's one house, but it yields mm-hmm. income, they can actually use 70% of that income that's coming in from the existing tenants to offset the cost of the mortgage for purchasing that house. Wow. So even if your financial aid isn't a ton, as long as it's of the nature that satisfies their needs to count it as, you know, your income, you can then add to that by finding a property that's already generating income, so long as there's a unit available for you to move into to satisfy the primary resident. So you could increase your income and take advantage of a small down payment option mm-hmm. to get in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So whether it's a grad student or somebody who maybe just recently graduated and their entry-level job doesn't pay a ton, but they want to buy a house or they want to buy something that would become an investment, mm-hmm. very, very, I would say, common and largely accessible opportunity there. Low down payment, using other people to help satisfy your income need
right.
to get in somewhere.
Yeah.
And even if it's a single unit, if you have a tenant or a roommate who's helping pay, you know, you think about how much the housing is near mm-hmm. campus. Some mm-hmm. of these are like $800 for a room inside of yeah. an apartment style place, mm-hmm. right? You could buy a house where your mortgage is less than the rent yeah. for a single room, have a roommate that pays most of the mortgage,
yeah.
and now your whole housing expense is opened up to where
right.
maybe you don't need an additional part-time job and you can emphasize your studies in pursuit of your degree, right? So that
yeah.
would be ideal for most students, I would think.
Yeah. Right.
So do you think this is an ideal scenario for graduate students, just because I would think graduate students have, for one, typically, at least in the nature of an art degree, I guess, we're given assistantships, meaning that we have contracts, like contracted salary jobs. So when a bank looks at your sort of job, right, I think they would look at sort of the stability of your job, right? In a sense.
Yeah, they want to see that you have a consistent source of income mm-hmm. because you're making an extremely long-term commitment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So for grad school, it's like 6 years on average, 6-7 years. And so, but like, say, for instance, if I'm your first year student, I finish my first year and I'm like, well, I passed. Everything's good. It looks like I'm going to spend the next 5-6 years here. At least the way everything is laid out to me, the most rational case to do instead of paying rent to somewhere, just throwing the money away for 6 years, putting it into something and building, owning property.
Yeah, you're building equity while you're
yeah.
doing it. So that was another reason why I got into it, because basically it's like, if I'm going to be living in a place for, you know, $700 a month, just throwing my money out the window essentially to some landlord, like, why don't I just do that where I get a house and actually put that money into a long-term investment. So mm-hmm. the money that I put into my property, you know, paying the mortgage, is something that stays with me until that property is completely mm-hmm. paid off, mm-hmm. right? So when I can rent this property out in the future continuously, yeah. and the kind of idea I had when I told Ray, you know, this in the beginning when I was getting my place was, you know, I wanted to kind of cater this towards graduate students so I could have a steady stream of graduate students throughout, you know, the entire, however long it takes, that can just keep renting my place. And it's kind of like also nice because the incoming graduate students will have a source of, you know, of reliable housing, And I think that's just a really good market, especially with physics graduate students, because, you know, I'm sure a lot of them are internationals, right? So they don't know anything about looking for places in America. So if you have a setup for them that's already very easy, and, you know, you have them in mind, and you send it out to, like, the physics department, let's say, it's a very easy way to get people in there consistently, and actually good people in there too, who, you know, are going to be there for 5-6 years, yeah, and they're going to have a steady stream of income.
Oh yeah. And I would say that you're actually touching upon something that I've seen a lot with some of my investors, especially people that are maybe professors or graduated program, that decided to buy something, is that they have an in with the reoccurring, tenant population that all fits a common model. Right. So they go, oh, these people have this kind of financial aid that satisfies this kind of payment. So I can feel comfortable that it's going to be the same experience largely. Right. I've eliminated some of the variability because I know in terms of what kind of the income there is and for how long they stay, I can, you know, anticipate this kind of system. So
yeah.
I was just talking to somebody who they were in the exercise physiology kind of area, and so they have a lot of tenants. They've since graduated, but they maintain the property. They kept the property, and they constantly have grad students from that program come in, and one tells their friend, hey, we're moving out. These are friends that had seen it when they came over to study or whatever, you know, oh, do you want to move in? And it's just, it carries on. That's probably 5 or 6, you know, just in the last 6 months, that I've come across from different programs. There's one out there right now that's predominantly pharmacy students and engineering, and they just kind of operate almost as their own property managers because they bring their tenants in, and it's just consistent.
It seems like a really easy and really good first time investing opportunity. So, you know, I'm really glad I got my place, and I think it's really helped. And even, you know, just doing this podcast, I mean, you, Juan, you and Ray, you both know, I mean, like, I haven't had a job in, you know, several months, so I can literally just, of course, I'm losing money, I guess, on paper, but yeah, by choice. So I can help actually build this podcast. But
well, how would you describe that? Was it you know how, like, in they call people who give up sex voluntarily celibate?
Yeah, voluntarily celibate.
Yeah, so
a vincel, I guess.
So for you, it would be you're not celibate, obviously, but yeah, like your job,
voluntarily jobless. So I don't know.
So you're not technically unemployed because that you have to be looking for a job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But I might have to be looking for a job soon or some way.
So voluntarily destitute?
Yeah. Voluntarily, it's nice aimless. Being destitute but this, if it's like this. So.
See, but this is supporting one of the main reasons why people like real estate investment, right? Because it provides an alleviation from common stressors, financial stressors. Mm-hmm. You might not have had the opportunity to dedicate this time in the pursuit of developing this podcast had you not created some sort of a system that reduced some of your expenses or provided additional income. Even if it doesn't cover your entire financial need, you've alleviated that need to where now you have room to pursue this.
Right, right. So yeah, it's a really good way to do it. And house hacking is what I do is where you have a tenant inside your house that just occupies one room, and then they essentially pay most of the mortgage. You know, of course, I'd have to still cover the extra expenses like the repairs, the vacancies, you know, capital expenditures, and then also, you know, just HOA fees and all that kind of stuff. But you know, that offsets a lot of the cost to where it's just a really good way to set yourself up. I mean, it's going to prepare you better for the future too. Cause you have equity now in that property too. So I think, with my property, I mean, Ray, you were telling me some of the numbers on the property. I think what, my property value increased by at least like what, 2% or something, or 3% already?
More than that.
More than that?
More than that. Okay. I'd say over the course of the last
25%,
few years.
Right? Was it 25?
20 to 25.
Yeah, yeah,
25
yeah.
might be a little bit high, but yeah, okay. 20 for sure. I mean, it was sizable. It was an increase. Okay. Now, 2018 was a uniquely aggressive increase, right? We had aggressive seller's market, meaning very low inventory for the amount of demand that we had. So that caused property values to go up. So you managed to buy at a good time and take advantage of that. But yeah, it's good. But here's another point that we kind of keep touching on that I want to bring to the forefront, if I may.
Yeah.
But before that point, you're talking about some of the advantages of having that tenant in there for as far as giving you money and getting equity. But, and I know you caution me from being overly technical, one of the like the largest advantages that come from this that I think eventually, you know, these PhD students will appreciate if they don't already is that that then creates a slew of tax advantages. So all the expenses for the portion of the property that is occupied by a tenant is arguably – now, disclosure, I'm not a CPA. But the
– Don't sue us or
yeah,
sue
please, please, please don't sue me. The, I'll get you – talk to Miles. He's my CPA. But okay, so but yeah, so all those expenses, yes, they're there, but now you have tax write-offs that you may really appreciate. And you have the equity, which comes into play because maybe a person doesn't want to keep this super long term. Mm-hmm. But having that equity develop, wow, as a recent graduate, maybe they're not going to stay at their next job for a long time. It's very common that people's entry position is not a long-lasting position. And you may be bouncing to a few places until you get to that position that you're going to be there for 5 or 10 years. And now you have equity in this property that you can sell and use to purchase, you know, your nice long-term property that you're going to live in. So it's a great way to as a carryover as well. Right. And then the other point that I had intended to bring up is
did it fly away?
Yeah.
So I guess maybe
a lot of caffeine.
Sorry. Yeah.
Do you have something else to add there, Juan?
No, it's just I guess we all suffer from low caffeine. I'm kind
of not me.
No. Oh yeah, you don't take.
No, I don't do that. Yeah. I don't do the caffeine.
I do caffeine, and then I'm also hungover. Slightly. For the listeners out there, they can't tell.
Oh, I got a question though, Ray. So one thing is it can also be a little daunting to try to invest in property your first time, right?
Sure.
For me, I felt a little more comfortable because I was getting, you know, a little bit more on top than the typical graduate student.
Sure.
So I had more confidence.
Okay.
But if not, I might have decided to partner with someone.
Sure.
So is there any kind of nice little house hacking system you could conceive of with, let's say, a partnership between two graduate students so they can pool their resources?
Yes. I mean, you can certainly do that, but there is a bottleneck. So I actually bought my first house partnered with – we weren't grad students, but I had a friend I've been friends with for a long time. I read Rich Dad Poor Dad. I said, yo, this is something I want to do, but I don't have the finances, and I also want to help alleviate my risk in – recognizing that I don't have a full grasp of it yet. So I wanted a partner. So losses would be split, right?
Right.
Income would be split. Reward would be split. But so would the losses. And I felt safer. And he read it. He's like, yeah, I want to do this.
And it probably just gave you more confidence anyway, as it is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Now, but here's – so what I'm getting at is this. You can certainly do partnerships. You might then want to pursue – if you're going to do a joint venture, doing it through an LLC and then the financing – changes. So it's a difficult answer without knowing how the lending side would work with each individual type of financial aid. You can certainly do a joint venture, have an exit strategy in place when you go in. You know, if one person is going to be, hey, I'll do a joint venture with you so that while we're in school, we each split everything. And then when we graduate, we can refinance and you can buy me out and then it's just yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. The challenge with a joint venture, if purchasing it in your own names, is that you're effectively going to bottleneck yourself if your intention is to continually purchase more properties, because when you own a property with somebody and you're both on that mortgage, you're each 100% obligated to that mortgage payment, but you can only take credit for half of the income, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you create a bottleneck in your debt to income ratio. Not to be overly technical, but if you need to get another loan, say, oh, okay, I got this house, now I need to get a car, and you're not going to be joint owners on the car because it's your car, not theirs, right?
Right.
And you go to apply for that. You now have 100% of that debt of the property against you, but can only count half of the income for it. So unless your income is enough to cover the full debt of that plus the car, you could be bottlenecking yourself from other financial needs or if you want to buy the next property. So if you're going to do it, hey, that's a great way to feel more confident, to get more income in the picture, mitigate risks, but have your exit strategy in place, an agreement, have it in writing, even if you're friends, just so that you can come back to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, how would you write an exit strategy? Do you have to get an attorney to write it or something or what?
I mean, that's going to be up to you. Again, I'm not an attorney, so I can't tell you precisely how to do it. It was fine for us. You know, we were very amicable, and we just got to a point where he was like, I don't want to. He wasn't as ambitious.
Say his names or anything.
Yeah. So he wasn't as ambitious with it, and it became apparent that he wasn't as ambitious with it, and the bottleneck became apparent because I was looking to purchase an additional property at that point. That was the third one, and I wasn't able to qualify without him applying also because we shared a few mortgages at that point, but only half of the incomes.
Yeah.
So what we ended up doing was, you know, he purchased a place, I refinanced the places that we had, so I was the only one, and then I was able to do my own things, right? So it worked fine for us not having mapped it all out, but we did have to go back and say, okay, what's going to be fair to both of us? If you're the type of person who can do that, which is difficult, right? To look at it objectively in a way that's going to be amicable, hey, fine. But most cases, you probably want to write something. It's almost like a divorce, right? It's like we want – when people are like, oh, we need to do a – what do you call it?
Prenuptial agreement.
Prenuptial agreement, right? They're like, hey, let's
– always do a prenuptial agreement.
Yeah. While we love each other, let's decide how we'll treat each other should we end up not loving each other.
Right, right.
So let's – it'll be the best terms because we like each other now versus if we don't like each other then, we're going to fight over it and it's going to get dirty.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
So – So the long story short, basically, choose your partner wisely if you're going to do it.
Yeah, choose your partner wisely. Make sure your terms are chosen wisely, right? I think really if you choose wise terms, the partner who's willing to agree to it, it kind of helps filter who's the right partner, right? Because the right partner is open to the right terms.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
Yeah.
And if, oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and if you're okay, so now, because in my head, I'm like, okay, you're setting it up to be where you're a fucking landlord in a college town, right?
Yeah.
So,
but that's good because if you have a, let's say, since we're kind of specifically catering this to graduate students, you know, a graduate student audience is great actually because you know that the income's coming in and you know they're just studying all day, every day. So the risk is so low, which is like, that was one of the reasons why I felt so confident to even do this because I knew, I mean, A, you have all of your tenants coming in. That's one of the biggest worries when people say, oh, if I buy a property, how will I get tenants in there? That's knocked out.
Yeah.
B, you have steady stream of income because they're all getting paid under your assistantships if you're a physics graduate student.
But,
you know,
but even undergraduates get a financial aid. And
yeah, that's true.
Comparatively speaking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Dorms are much more expensive than something like paying rent
in a house. And, you know, graduate and undergraduates don't really get paid to go to school, though. So graduates
still
actually
have
get
financial
paid.
Aid to pay for like room and board and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. But it's still a different situation, right? They're going into debt. Whereas in graduate school, you're not going into debt.
The situation with the undergrad is you'd probably, just like those student housing places, you would probably look to have a guarantor sign along with them. So it's not just them on the hook to pay with their financial aid. It's a parent that's there with them to back it with their own finances and credit. So that's there as well. The difference, I guess, in the housing opportunities there is that a lot of the undergraduate places, the new development places, they offer additional amenities like, oh, we have these pool parties and cookouts and all this, you know. A lot of the grad students are like, I don't want that noise.
Yeah.
So, right. You have those reoccurring, look, I'm just trying to study and get through this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a different tenant pool.
Right. You can almost go like super bare bones, just a nice spot in a good, convenient location. It just seems like a very solid audience to hit, which is why I chose to go down that, you know, down that trajectory. So, very interesting. So let's kind of talk numbers then, Ray.
Ooh.
So
I thought you said you didn't want to get complicated.
Not too bad. I want to challenge you
to physics majors. So
I want to challenge you to think simply, but, you know, we can go conceptual with it, you know. But so let's say if we had like a $100,000 house.
Okay.
Kind of give us a ballpark figure. I kind of already know the ballpark, but I want you to kind of tell. What are some ballpark figures? Of course, it depends too on the situation, but what are some ballpark numbers for how much money you need to save in order to buy your first house for, let's say, a house hacking situation where you are going to get another graduate student in your house with you? Mm-hmm. You know, $100,000 property.
Yeah.
How much money do you need to actually do that to start off with?
So there are a number of different scenarios depending on your financing or if you're going for a single family or multifamily. But we'll say the most likely route that you would take is going to be using an FHA mortgage. So you have first-time home buyer options. You're probably looking at 3.5%, maybe 5% down. a lot of times the first time home buyer options for that 3.5, especially if it were a conventional mortgage, will have some sort of minor education stipulation, like, hey, you got to watch this this video or this, go through this slideshow and answer a couple questions.
I think mine did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I used when I bought my first one too. And it was stuff like, hey, should you pay your mortgage? And you go, yeah. Do you need insurance? Yep, probably.
Right.
it was really easy, but that allows them to feel that you're a little bit of a safer person, so they're willing to take on a riskier portion of the debt.
It's that intellectual barrier of entry.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't teach financial literacy in school anymore.
Right.
So,
right.
But yeah, so 3.5. So if you were buying a $100,000 property,
yeah, 100K.
That puts you at $3,500 for the down payment, mm-hmm. You're going to want to do inspections. I always encourage as much due diligence as you can afford to feel confident in your
definitely
decision.
Definitely do that.
So, yeah, home inspections, yeah. Very, you know, I'll say ballpark, $400. Mm-hmm. A wood damaging organism inspection, that's where they look for termites and powder post beetles, wood rot, that's around $150 to $200.
Mm-hmm.
You can get wind mitigation inspections, which is, you know, we get a lot of hurricanes out here or a lot of storms. They check the nail patterns, hurricane clips, supports for the roof,
right,
to see if it's, I guess, more durable to some of those harsh winds.
Mm-hmm.
That gets you a discount on your insurance also. So it's usually worth doing. Those costs around $75 to $150 depending on your inspector. And a lot of times you give discounts if you're doing bulk stuff. There's radon now is mm-hmm. like the big hazardous thing. You know, there was asbestos, there was lead-based paint. Now it's radon. That is a naturally occurring gas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Under the Earth's surface, Earth's always moving. It comes out sometimes. It's actually the second leading cause of lung cancer, as it turns out.
Oh, damn.
It's odorless. Mm. It's invisible. They got to do an air content test. In Leon County, where we're at, I don't know if you tell people where we're at, but that's where we're at, everybody, if you want to find them.
It's okay. I told Juan we were probably going to get doxxed this episode, so fuck it.
Whoops. All you got
to
do. All right.
Well, you got to make it relevant to you, so we're willing to take the hit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
We're doing it for you,
Ray. Yeah, whatever you want to do, Ray, we're fine with it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Here specifically, you're saying they do...
So I was going to say here specifically, about 17% of properties that are tested test as having a high concentration of radon gas. So it costs about $100 to $200, again, depending on if you're doing all the series of services.
Mm-hmm.
It's a test they do. I'll tell you the good news is, well, yeah, $100 to $200 to find out if you have it might feel a little expensive if you're looking to stay low out of pocket. But to have the mitigation system put in is about $1,600 to $1,800.
Oof.
Yeah. So it's way better to find out if it's there because you could generally get the seller to pay for it because they have to disclose any known, you know, hazards or defects. So no one else is going to want to buy it knowing that there's that issue. So you can usually get them to pay the big ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
By paying that up front. And then if not, you have peace of mind that you're not going to graduate with lung cancer.
So, I think I actually skipped the radon.
Uh-oh.
Because someone said that you can alleviate any kind of radon issues if you just open the windows periodically. So I was like, ah, fuck it. We'll open the window. So hopefully won't die of lung cancer.
Whoops.
But actually, I think we also might have had some inspection reports or something that we looked at that said there was no radon issues.
Yeah, it might have
been. In the area or something. I'm pretty sure we probably checked it out, so I had the confidence to not do the test.
Yeah, and it's up to you. I mean, even now, I again always encourage all as much due diligence as you feel confident.
But be smart.
Some people want to go, 17% still means that there's an 83% likelihood that there's no issue.
Yeah.
Now, there's confounding variables in that because it's based on only the ones that are tested, right? And the good news is new construction is already having items put in. They put in like this sheath that protects it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of the new ones are being protected when they're built. A lot of the old ones that are testing high are getting mitigated. So as time goes on, you should find that there's, you know, a diminishing number of properties that are at risk.
Yeah.
And even now, there's an 83% chance that you're okay. But
yeah
do the
mine's with the newer properties too.
Yeah.
Well, 2012, so.
Yeah.
That should be. I think all the factors were in our favor. Yeah, when I was curious. Yeah.
Now, all that to be said, I think the question was, what's the out-of-pocket expense to anticipate, right?
Yes, expenses. Of everything.
So $3,500 for the down payment. between 700 and 1,000 for your inspections.
So say
you probably don't need to go to 1,000. Like 700, you get most all everything that we talked about for 700 or less. I have had investors who've said, hey, especially if it's an older property, I want to go ahead and have a plumber out here just to snake the drains or run a camera because, you know, if you have cast iron pipes, they rust from inside out. Sometimes you can't tell by looking on the outside. They said, let's just do it because I don't want to have to find out, I have to replumb the house.
Yeah.
You know, some of these expenses up front save you big time afterwards, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. But so we'll say 1,000 to be on the very safe side for your inspections. So you're at 4,500. And then you have a question of down the closing costs.
Yes.
Which – on average, we find tends to be in a ballpark of 4 to 6% of the purchase price. The higher the price, the lower the percentage. What happens is there are some fixed costs that are closing cost items. Mm-hmm. So as the price goes up respectively, those are a lower percentage. As it goes down respectively, they're a higher percentage. Mm-hmm. So 4 to 6%. So on 100,000, we'll call it 6,000.
Okay.
So now we're looking at somewhere around 15,500, I think. 15,500.
Yep. Okay.
And so that's still a substantial sum, right?
Yeah.
But here's the good news. There are lending options that have down closing cost discounts. So there are some that might not charge origination fees. That saves $4,000. You can negotiate, if you're doing FHA, for up to 6% of the purchase price to be conceded to you from the seller, either from their net or if the property will allow for it to still fit within the appraised value, stacking it on top. So you're wrapping those costs into the mortgage. If they weren't fully eliminated with a discount, you can use down payment assistance programs, depending on what's out there, depending on income and credit levels, to where some of the down payment can be satisfied. If you're in an area that qualifies as rural, there are 0% down options. If you're a vet before you came to grad school or, you know, whatever, there are 0% down options. So there are a lot of options where you could eliminate or reduce each of those categories of costs.
Right.
So you might be able to do it. I mean, I've had people buy things with like nothing in.
Yeah.
I had one person got $1,000 back at the closing table.
Oh, wow.
Because they put in their earnest deposit, had all the other stuff we negotiated out of the picture for them.
Right.
And they got it back at the closing table.
So I guess the moral of that story is basically the more you know about how to skirt around things, the more and more you can reduce the price. Of course, if you're a first timer, you're probably not going to be able to do that. So what you should do is, of course, save as much as you can. To actually, you know, make yourself secure and actually making a purchase. But this is one of these things where if you want to get started, it's going to get easier and easier and easier over time because you're going to be so knowledgeable. You'll be able to knock down costs more and more. I think for my house, when I first did it, it was around the $100,000 mark. And I came out about 10 grand on closing costs, which was pretty solid because I think I saved up probably about 25,000 at that point. So I felt really secure and I was able to get any other weird things that happen taken care of after the fact.
And we were able to get well, I don't know how much you want to share about your transaction.
Yeah, experience. You can. I don't mind.
We got you 3% paid from, because you bought a bank owned property.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then we used a renovation mortgage for you.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the bank to pay 3% of the purchase price towards
That's
your closing
right.
costs.
That's right.
Which allowed you to then wrap your PMI rather than your monthly make now. Okay, for clarity, you used the conventional option.
I did.
Rather than the FHA one we were talking about. But because it was first-time home buyer, you could still do 3% down because it was
I think I did 5.
You did 5%?
Yeah,
okay.
5%.
But because it was conventional, you could wrap your PMI in as a closing cost rather than FHA. They don't let you do that currently. And your PMI would have gone away once you've accumulated enough equity, where FHA, it stays permanently. So you are actually able to reduce your monthly payment to save long-term by paying it up front using some funds conceded from the bank, the seller.
Yes.
So that was a really clever strategy.
Right.
And then when we're talking, tell me if we're getting too complicated, but when doing like a multifamily purchase that already has tenants that are occupying the other units that you're not going to occupy, not only do you get the perk of getting 70% of the rent that it's bringing in to offset that cost so that your income shows better on the bank's application, but you can strategically choose your closing date. If you close on the second day of the month, you get credited the rent for all the days of that first month that you would have been the owner at the closing table. So they're actually taking that and applying it to you get a credit at closing so that what you have to bring to the table is reduced because the tenant's already paid that rent.
Right.
And then if you close on any day other than the first of the month, you don't have to pay. You know, you can choose not to have your first month's payment be the following month. It could be the one after. So you, not only did you get credited all that rent for the remaining days of the month that you closed in as the new owner, but that next month you actually get all the rent again without having to pay a debt service, right? Without having to pay the bank. So that you can recoup some of the funds that you did have to come out of pocket with.
Right, right.
So there are a lot of different ways to where you can get your immediate cost mitigated.
Yes. So again, the moral of the story is the more knowledge you want to put into it and the more time you put into it.
The quality of service provider that helps you.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So yeah, take note of Ray. He's definitely available for inquiries. But yeah, the more knowledge that you put into and the better people on your team, you're going to have more and more reduction of costs. Right. Like there's real estate is really fun. I found it's like a really cool way to figure out a bunch of different ways to buy things with no money. So the better you get, I mean, like Ray, you're like a master of this, or at least you're better than anybody I know so far. So I mean, you at least know of ways to, like you know a lot of ways to get things for very, very little money or no money that I've seen from, or at least from what you've told me so far.
Yeah. Thanks. So I think that stems from this philosophy of value that at some point I was fortunate enough to come into this perspective, and I think a lot of people benefit from, is that the value of a dollar is not fixed. Right. Money. You've heard me say this before.
Yeah.
Money is just a middleman, an exchange of value between one opportunity and the value of hopefully a greater opportunity. And so if you're able to identify ways to exchange value that aren't monetary, a lot of times you can acquire things of value without having spent that money. Right. So if there's something I could get that's of value to me but of less value to them due to some circumstance, and I can provide them of something from me in exchange for it that's of less value to me and more to them due to some circumstance, I'm able to get it without having to use that money, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that exchange of value, that application of that exchange of value and that perspective will benefit people in any realm, real estate or otherwise. That's really, I think, how you get ahead.
So in your experience, I guess, what is probably – say I'm house hunting, right?
Sure.
And I'm looking, and I guess I'm talking to people like you and just kind of getting a sense of what is out there. In your experience, is it better to look at private sellers, banks, like, you know, selling houses? What do you think? Like,
to get the biggest bang for your buck?
Yeah, in that sense, I guess. Or is it just a matter of like speaking to like a realtor or somebody like you who's just kind of like who knows or surveys the landscape?
So this is going to be a broader answer than maybe you're hoping for.
No, it's fine.
Which you'll
no,
find
I'm looking
with every
for
question.
A broad answer because it's a general question. It's like kind of like, but I imagine that some of the people listening might have this question at their head. Let's like, well, how do I navigate all this kind of thing?
I would say that for our core question here, or the core scenario of a grad student, that's not what you're not trying to buy this first house because you want to be a serial investor. Maybe that might be something you want to do eventually, and I support you in that decision. I think that's a fantastic decision. But your main goal at that time in your life is to focus on your studies and get that degree to pursue whatever career choice you made. So in that realm, you're going to be talking to a professional, a realtor in most instances, who is already familiar with the market. Mm-hmm. And then even within the realtor community, you'll find that there are some who specialize in some areas of expertise that others don't. Like for myself, one of my specialties and my core passion and why I got into real estate is real estate investment. So I'm a little bit more attuned to some of those opportunities, either before they hit the market or opportunities that aren't going to hit the market. And so if you're looking for something like that, if you're an investor, if we're not talking about the grad student scenario again, but if you're an investor looking for opportunities like that where you have some unique exchange of value so that you can buy a property with less out of pocket, then you want to use a realtor who's attuned to that kind of an area for sure. But there's also going to be others. You shouldn't limit yourself to just a realtor. You should also be looking at different ways to find them. I mean, it could be a broad mass of things. You could be looking at properties that failed to sell. A lot of people like to pester for sale by owners saying, hey, are you giving up? Just sell it to me for a discount price. You could try to do estate sales or probate. You could try to do bank-owned properties. You could try to get on lists with different property managers. Mm-hmm. You know, if they have tenants that want to sell their stuff, like out-of-town investors, right. Okay, let's go and liquidate. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways that you can find them. If you're the grad student, you're not really trying to do all that at that stage, I would think.
I imagine,
not the bulk
yeah.
of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just want to find someone that knows, you know, connections with good lending options and can get you a property yeah. that fits those needs, and you know keep it simple for you. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to be a professional investor, mm-hmm. you definitely want to partner with a realtor as part of it. Mm-hmm. You want to develop relationships with what we would call core advocates. We in real estate sales kind of use that term for people who have a regular real estate need that are not realtors. As right. an investor, your core advocates would be people who have regular access to properties that might be of interest, mm-hmm. but aren't themselves buying them. Mm-hmm. So you might have probate attorneys, you might have different bankers that you know that work with companies that handle a lot of foreclosures,
right.
Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of develop your network.
Because a part of me, honestly, the most rational decision to do there is to talk to a professional, like you're saying.
Sure. I mean, it's leverage.
Yeah. Because like in my head, I know that there are a lot of people like me out there that are sort of, you know, because a lot of the grad students are critical thinking people and they're like, I can do it all myself. I don't have to pay somebody.
Not a good idea in real estate. 100%
yeah,
not a good
yeah,
idea.
So yeah. That's what I wanted to say, because it's a very niche thing, and you're not going to find, it's going to be
There's
hard to find
so many steps that I did not know. Like when I went through this process, I just realized how much shit there actually is involved with this. Like
yeah.
there are so many steps to take. Like
yeah.
I had to rely on Ray for so much stuff because there's no way it would have ever gotten done, because there's yeah. just too many things you just don't know. If you have a real estate agent in your corner though, I mean, the process is just so smooth. It's like you need to get a real estate agent at the very minimum.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's just like anything, right? The reason yeah. you're pursuing a PhD in whatever field you're studying is because it is a skilled service or a skilled area of expertise,
mm-hmm.
right? If I go, I can rationalize theoretical physics on my own. Why right. do I need no, I'm not going to do that. I have to spend right. all that time to learn up to then yeah. try to perform right. in a way that somebody else is already
time.
Capable of.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, why learn the entire real estate process and establish all these networks mm-hmm. if really my goal in being an investor is to get passive returns?
Mm-hmm.
That's counterintuitive. It's no longer passive. I am developing a new skill set to take on a new yeah. job so that I can yeah. buy things so I don't need to have a job. Yeah. That makes no sense.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
So, yeah. So you got to use your time
it's
wisely.
Leverage. Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. What was I just going to say? Oh, yeah. So one question I had, Ray, was let's say you're a graduate student, but you really suck at kind of saving money.
Okay.
So let's say you're in a shitty spot. You're like, my rent takes up like 80% of my income and I only got enough for like food. But let's say you have like credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever recommend anyone to use lines of credit to actually purchase a house?
Well, I mean, when you get a mortgage, you're effectively using a line of credit
right.
to purchase a house. So in that sense, yes, you got to be cautious with debt. Another philosophy that you've heard me say in class is that I see debt as a tool.
Yep.
Right. I look at it as a circular saw.
I just interject real quick. That's
sure.
one thing that was really critical for me to understand. Actually, in this whole real estate investing process, I used to always wonder how rich guys made money from doing shit like this. I'm like, how the fuck do they make money? You actually, when you learn this process of investing, you're actually learning how to make debt make you more money. And it's something that's like you don't really get it until you actually do it. But me taking on debt actually has allowed me to make more money than I would have ever been able to make without doing that. So I get this process now. It's being able to leverage your debt to make money now.
And I mean, in a sense, a degree does that too. So if you're not aware of that.
Sure.
Yeah, it's yeah. a little bit different though. So that's more clear cut because you're like, I can take out the debt now and then repay it when I get a job.
Yeah.
Well,
this one's different in a sense that
there's more value in the yeah. sense that like it's an actual tangible physical thing.
So, see, this is perfect because this brings us back to that thought of it's an exchange of value, right?
Right?
Money
mm-hmm.
is
yeah.
just the middleman of value.
Right.
So in getting a degree, you're exchanging the value mm-hmm. of whatever else you could have been doing
mm-hmm.
for the value of understanding.
Right.
And then you can trade the value of that understanding for a job.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
And then you're
yeah.
trading I mean, it's opportunity cost, right? You're selling your life for whatever amount.
Yeah.
But I mean, the mortgage is the same.
Yeah.
Sure, but in the sense of a mortgage, like you're saying, you get passive income if that's like something that you're interested in. And the amount of debt that I went into for school, right, at least for undergraduate, I could have bought a house, a cheap house. But it's still a house.
No, you could have probably bought a house.
Maybe I could have bought a
house. Because, I mean, what we were saying with down payments, I only put down $10,000, so you definitely could have bought a house.
Oh, yeah.
Probably several houses.
So this was actually the point I forgot that I wanted to make earlier.
Yeah.
Right? So the student loan, I guess, epidemic, right? People are so deep into student loans, and then they get this income-based payment options. So you could just pay this much respective to your income, but it doesn't change the interest that's growing on the loan, and then their payments are not enough to satisfy the actual rate of pay you'd have to do to beat that loan.
Right. Yeah.
Somehow 10 years later, they owe more than they ever did.
Right. So stupid. It's such a racket.
Yeah. So not only buying the house would help in alleviating your financial needs at the time of in college, but then when you're working, it supplements additional income that can go towards helping pay down that debt faster.
Exactly. Yeah.
So even if you don't have a job right out of college that is paying enough that you can just drop huge sums on it, if you can meet the normal payment and then also have that on top, you can accelerate that pay down substantially. So there's another perk. But going back to that question of debt, because that's something that definitely needs to be addressed. I'm going to go back to my metaphor.
Sure.
Because I like it. I don't know. Yeah. So I use a circular saw example, right? Mostly because I don't really know how to use one and I wouldn't trust myself around it. It's like a dangerous tool. You cut your fingers off if you know what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
But in the hands of a craftsman, of a skilled person, they can make some amazing furniture. So it is a tool, when used responsibly and properly, that creates an awesome opportunity. But when used irresponsibly, can wreak havoc, right? Can totally change your life for the worse. Mm-hmm. So taking on debt for anything, you gotta ask, is what this debt allows me to do of greater value than the cost of this debt? And so with real estate, as long as you're running your numbers properly, it's going to pay you more than the cost of the debt. And then in real estate specifically, you're incentivized with tax breaks to where that debt is actually mitigated because you can write it off on your taxes in some ways. And I don't want to go into too much depth there because I know that's one of those trickier comments. But so using a line of credit to purchase a house, yes, so long as that house yields a return greater than the cost. Using a line of credit to purchase spring break, don't do that.
Yeah.
Y'all got to stop doing that.
So actually, that was some good points you raised there, Ray. For one, that may be kind of obvious to you now, but actually, it may be obvious to some people, but one thing that you really need to do is when you're getting into this arena is you really, really, really got to run the numbers. Like, don't just be like, oh, I got some cash on me now. Let's go buy this house and not look into any numbers. You need to run your numbers because this is an investment. So an investment, you need to take in account of all of your expenses to make sure that you're actually going to have enough to come out cash flow positive. That's the whole point of an investment. So if you aren't running numbers, then you're in the dark completely on what you're actually making. And the resource I started off with was Bigger Pockets. I think I told you that, Ray, at the beginning. Yeah. So he had a really nice four square method, I think it's called. I think you've seen it before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of walks you through the process of actually taking down all of your major expenses and then seeing what you're going to actually end up with your cash for your cash on cash return is what he calls it at the end. So if you have a starting template that you can just go to Excel, go to Bigger Pockets and find that template. It's actually free on Bigger Pockets. That's a good way to practice actually getting yourself familiar with the running the numbers and actually seeing if you're going to come out cash flow positive. That is a critical must-do step for any kind of investing. And that's something you have to do now into the end of time if you're going to actually get into real estate investing. Mm-hmm. Actually, really any investing, you got to know your numbers.
And it gets easier with each one.
Yeah, because all your stuff is then made at that point.
Yeah,
yeah, you got your model. The first one, you're kind of guessing about the experience, and you do your best, but...
Yeah, I was always a little nervous. I'm like, did I actually factor this in right? Is my Excel formula correct? Like, I had you check it probably like, six or seven times, and you're like, yeah, it looks good,
The beauty of it is the system of real estate investment is somewhat self-mitigating and risk due to the tax advantages. Mm-hmm. So even if you're a little bit off, it's not going to hurt you as bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of self-correcting.
Don't be in the complete dark.
Oh, no, definitely don't be in the complete dark.
Like, know at least something that's... Try your best to know as well as you can what's actually happening. If you mess up a little bit here and there, you're not going to be done, you know? Just be smart about it. Always, always run your numbers and always try to make sure you know what's coming in. And you can self-correct. Like, that's another thing. When I said I bought my house for 10 grand, but I decided to save up about 25,000 before I felt secure, because I always wanted to make sure that if I did mess up, I wouldn't feel worried at all if there were some extra expenses. And I really didn't spend that much. I think I spent maybe $2,000 or $3,000 after the fact on some, like, gutters and things and some paint and stuff. Right. So, I mean, that really it all worked out really well. So it was a good way to start, I would say.
If I can do a little self plug for any of our local listeners,
We're coming on the time, so maybe go ahead and give a plug, man.
Talking about knowing your numbers, I'm teaching my real estate investment classes. In March will be the first time I do it boot camp style. I've got 3 lesson plans. I'm going to teach each one. Class 1 weekend, class 2 the next, and then class 3 the next. And class 2 is all about running the numbers. It's all the math, all kinds of different types of rates of return, how to find out the cash flow that you're going to have, how to identify how much risk there is in a given purchase. Mm-hmm. So any of our local listeners that want to learn about that stuff, come on out. The classes are free. They're all sponsored by different people on my team. Lunch is provided. Mm-hmm. I mean, come to all 3. The first one's Core Advantages, the foundation. Third one, which I've not yet written. I did come up with a sick cover page so far. That one is on creative financing structures. So I think that's going to be very interesting for people.
Nice. Oh, so that's that would be like house hacking or like...
House hacking is definitely a part of it.
Uh-huh. Or doing like multifamily units, renting out 2 units and then having one yourself. Yeah, that sounds...
And some non-traditional
useful
financing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Private lending options, or if you wanted to try an owner financing option or commercial loan options, stuff
right.
So people know. That's really kind of, as you have a couple and you want to scale, it opens up those additional opportunities. But house hacking for sure, even if you don't have one yet, would be a great value to learn about if this is something you want to pursue.
Right. Cool, man.
Nice.
So we're coming up on the time here, Ray. So I guess we'll kind of close out a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to see, did you have any final thoughts, Juan, or Ray, do you have any final thoughts?
No, but I mean, I would just say, if you have the chance and you're going to be a graduate student and you're definitely in the PhD program and you're going to be in whatever city you're going to be in for 5 to 6 years, maybe even 7, do it. But, get serious about it, because you don't want to put that money into just
bullshit,
into paying rent. You're going to be paying rent wherever you're living. You might as well.
You're throwing away cash, essentially.
Yeah, you might as well pay to own in a sense, right?
Yeah.
So, sit down with a professional and like Ray, or maybe you can hit Ray up and then,
he's on
social media.
Social media.
Yeah, he's got business accounts.
Ray Uzzoni Realtor, there Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah. We'll probably plug your stuff. We'll plug your stuff at the end too. So
cool.
So just hit them up and I think.
Any final thought, Ray?
So going along with that, I mean, for all y'all grad students out there, I would think that you're of kind of the inquisitive nature. Mm-hmm. May as well apply that, right? It only takes a couple hours to look into see if this is an option for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if before this you hadn't really been thinking about it, just sit down with somebody, see what it will look like for you. Maybe it does. Yeah. Maybe it doesn't work. I don't know.
Yeah, I think graduate physicists in general would do well with the numbers and things. But the thing I worry about with physicists is the actual doing it part. So they're really good at the theory and, thinking about it. But, once we solve the problem, it's like, oh, that's nice.
It's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. We're good. We don't actually want to put it in action. So, guys, guys, if you can... This is a great thing to put into action. Yeah. This has helped me a lot. And I say, just try to find that courage to do it. Mm-hmm. Go out and have, get a good person on your team like Ray here, and it'll make your process a lot smoother, especially someone who is about doing. People who are about doing will help you actually to get motivated to do it. So it will help. It will help.
So, yeah.
I'm a little bit bitter that Kat never came over here.
I know.
Oh, Maisie never came.
She was almost. She gave her second thoughts. Like, how nice would that be?
Yeah. Well, I do it all the time.
Unfortunately, Maisie couldn't make it. I don't know where she went.
She couldn't make an appearance this time. Oh, well.
But anyway, folks, I guess that's it for today.
Oh, let's leave him a question though.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I guess what I want to say is just basically, what do you guys think in general about this practice? Is this something you're interested in? And any questions that you have that you could have? Maybe I can relate to Ray that you would be. Mm-hmm. You know, interested in asking him about real estate investing, for, especially if you want to get specific for graduate students. Mm-hmm. Just leave it in the comments, and we'll see if I can. I'll just text Ray one day, you know, and I'll ask him. And I'm sure he'll respond. So yeah,
and we'll follow up
probably on the show. Answer yeah. with a longer explanation than really cares to hear.
I'll just copy and paste and then go on the YouTube comment.
Perfect.
But yeah, so. All right. Thanks, folks, and stay for the outro.
All right, we'll see you guys.
Thanks for having me, guys. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Folks, for making it this far.
Thank you once again, guys. We love you.
Yeah. Had a blast.
Ray, so for the folks listening again, where can they reach you?
You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Ray Uzoni Realtor. That's R-A-Y space U-Z-O-N-Y-I. Realtors R-E-A-L-T-O-R.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should I plug my classes?
Yeah, man. Yeah,
if you're going to be in Tallahassee March 7th, 14th, and 21st, mm-hmm. I'll be doing three different classes, from the intro core advantages to how to do all the math to figure out what your returns are going to be and how mm-hmm. safe you are on investment, and then different creative financing structures to scale. I'd love to have you out.
Cool.
Excellent. And guys, make sure once again, like, subscribe, comment, share, all that good stuff. Check us out at EigenBros.com. Check us out at EigenBros on Twitter, EigenBros on Instagram as well, and then EigenBros2 on TikTok. And we will see you guys next episode.
Yes. Yep.